Talk Radio 790 KABC, Peter till the 10 continues. Hour number two, brought to you by Larry Miller and Sit'n Sleep. He'll beat anyone's advertised price, or your mattress is free. We got Jackson Brown tickets, Carrot Top tickets, the phone number 800-222-5222. Larry Kudlow, TV personality and economist, is obviously going to replace Mr. Cohen. It looks like that's the news, that he will be nominated to replace. And the president kind of tipped out the other day that they've been friends for a long time. And I don't think Kudlow is behind the tariff thing for steel and aluminum. Don't know where he is now, but it looks like the president's trying to assemble a cabinet, unlike Rex Tillerson, where there was huge daylight between him and Tillerson as far as what they believed. I mean, Tillerson was on the road a lot, and the president would continually butt heads with him as far as policy. And Tillerson would talk about diplomacy with North Korea, and the president would say, don't waste your time. Iran, he was for staying in the nuclear deal. The president trashed the nuclear deal, and on and on and on. So he's gone. In reading stories, which is kind of fascinating, post-Tillerson now, apparently Tillerson was left out of the loop a lot, and that ticked him off. And the Trump, according to sources, boasted to advisors he enjoyed the process more without Tillerson involved, and apparently they also fought all the time. He soured on Tillerson early on and mocked his mannerisms and Texas drawl in private, saying his Secretary of State talked too slowly. He also didn't like how he appeared in the media's media profile. The guy never gets a good story about him, Trump said. He also resented appearing subservient to Jared Kushner because Kushner had no foreign policy experience. Tillerson ran ExxonMobil, and apparently Tillerson showed his animosity toward Kushner by not returning phone calls for days, and would gripe to the White House about keeping the State Department out of the loop. One interesting story that I hadn't heard before. Apparently, the president was with Rex Tillerson in a private room in China's Great Hall of the People in November, and Secretary of State sat with him and some other U.S. officials, and their host delivered plates of wilted Caesar salad. Mr. Trump, in the midst of a five-country tour of Asia, remember that, grew concerned the untouched greens would offend the Chinese because they were just sitting there. So he basically said, according to people familiar with the matter, he ordered Tillerson to start eating it, eat the salad. And Tillerson was not happy, but it showed that kind of awkward relationship between the Secretary of State and his boss. So there was no love lost there. He's much happier with Mike Pompeo, apparently. But Mike Pompeo is much more hawkish. So it's going to be interesting to see, in preparation for the North Korea trip, how they will prepared. He's more skeptical of the diplomatic arrangement with North Korea and the Iran deal and TPP. So he's going to have a much friendlier chief of staff when it comes to his policy in the White House. It looks like Rand Paul is not happy about Gina Haspel being nominated to head up the CIA because of her history with torture with the CIA. She's a veteran who ran the Black Site prison in Thailand in 2002, later played a role in the CIA's destruction of tapes of the interrogation sessions of terrorism detainees. The question is, should she be appointed to the head of the CIA, or is that a tainted background, the fact that she was involved in that? She did move up to the deputy. She's been there for 32 years. And it's interesting, Leon Panetta, who led the agency for 2 years during Obama's presidency, was also chief of staff to Bill Clinton, said she ought to be really based on her entire record, and that shouldn't take her out. What do you think? Again, it was in context. It was right after 9/11 when decisions were made, and they were tasked with making sure that this never happened again. They didn't know if there was going to be another attack, if it was imminent. So they did things that now, looking back on it in 2018, of course, you say this was horrendous. I've been on this station a long time, and I've interviewed a lot of people about water torture and different torture techniques. And it's interesting, to a person, members of the CIA, of the intel community, have said to me they are against waterboarding. And instinctively you go, well, you do anything you can to get intel out of somebody with a clock ticking, and you want to keep us safe, and you don't have intel about what's going on, and you need to get the info. And every single one of them, including one who had written a book and was a proponent of water torturing during that time, said it was a mistake. It yields erroneous information that wastes a lot of time, that takes you down all kinds of roads you don't want to go down, And when I asked what works better, they wouldn't tell me because they said there are other techniques that they don't want to talk about on necessarily on talk radio and tell the public about, but that waterboarding is not something that works. John McCain, who leads the Senate Armed Service Committee, said Gina Haspel's nomination revives his longstanding opposition to torture, which was shaped by his own experience as a prisoner during the Vietnam War, and that she needs to explain the nature and extent of her involvement in the CIA's interrogation program during the confirmation process. And it will be fascinating to see who goes after her, if it's the Democrats, if it's Republicans, if it's both are concerned and they want to get to the bottom of it, or if it's going to be a partisan issue, and if the intel community is going to be under assault during this confirmation hearing. It should be very, very interesting to see how that goes. Meanwhile, Sam Nunberg, who was the president's aide, and left the White House, testified in front of Mueller's committee and talked about Roger Stone and claiming he warned Roger about associating himself with WikiLeaks. I have that clip. But Roger claims that he didn't talk directly to Julian Assange. There have been proof by The Atlantic that he did was in direct conversation with WikiLeaks, and Roger Stone did talk to Julian Assange. The question is now, did they orchestrate the drop of this information? Here's what Sam Nunberg said.
I had warned Roger, who I'm very close with, during that last summer. I had warned him repeatedly during that 2016 summer, do not associate yourself with Julian Assange. And I said for two reasons. Yeah. One, at that point, it seemed pretty obvious that Hillary Clinton was going to win, and there was surely going to be a special counsel into these matters. And if there was a Democrat majority in either body of Congress, then he was going to be called. Little do I know that even Donald Trump can get elected, and we still have a special counsel. I mean, that's really an accomplishment by the president.
But what did Roger Stone, how did he respond to you when you said don't deal with WikiLeaks?
Roger's going to do what Roger's going to do. Roger's advised me to do what I, not to do certain things. We're very stubborn people.
And it'll be fascinating to find out what Mr. Mueller finds out about Roger Stone and what he did. Because Roger was bragging all along and then denied it, and then Roger's off the wall. The other thing I know about Roger, if he goes to prison, it's going to be weird. He'll be safe in a prison because nobody, I think, will come up behind him because he's got that giant tattoo of Nixon on the back of his neck. So I think he's safe as far as prison sex. I don't know, unless somebody's turned on by Nixon. But Nunberg said another interesting thing, the most interesting thing, on Allison Camerota on CNN. We're talking about politics. We're talking about Tillerson. We're talking about Mueller. We're talking about North Korea. And here's what he said about his appearances on television all of last week, and the fact that people thought he was melting down, people thought he was bipolar, people thought he was drinking. Here's what he said.
The last time we saw you was the Samapalooza, where you set a record to be on all sorts of cable shows, and it's...
By the way, we beat Fox News in every single... We beat Fox News that hour, so... So in total and demo.
Watching the ratings, thinking that Sam Nunberg is a big draw, and it sounds like you are, but people were concerned about you. How are you doing?
I'm great. I was very stressed out that day.
You've been called by the special counsel.
It wasn't that being called by the special counsel. The special counsel, the voluntary interview is actually more stressful than the grand jury testimony, because in the grand jury, all they want is the information. And I want to just say, too, they've never asked me for my opinion, and especially in front of this grand jury. They've never asked that. Facts, facts, facts. What do you know firsthand? No hearsay, no even double hearsay. So... I think maybe I did too many interviews at that point, but it was a fun day. We're still talking about it. And I don't want to keep repeating the line, Sam had a TV meltdown. I thought it was great TV, and I thank Aaron for the interview.
And there you go. So in a country now where we're trying to get health care, we're trying to figure out what we should do about immigration, we're trying to figure out what we should do about the budget, we're trying to figure out what we should do, a lot of big issues, infrastructure. You have Sam Nunberg kind of underlining the fact that I thought it was good TV and the ratings were great. Is that where we're going today? It doesn't matter what you say or how you come off. The ratings were great for Sam Nunberg. And I love that he knew what the ratings were, that he knew the different demos and he knew that he beat Fox that night. That to me is about as insane as it gets, that it's all about that. But I guess that's where we're moving to in this Kardashian type world, even in politics. Meanwhile, in the PA election, the Pennsylvania election, you have the Democratic candidate who looks like he's going to win. He's going to squeak out a win at this point. I don't think, Joe, did they give a conclusion yet? So they're counting the absentee ballots, and I think they're a couple hundred apart. It looks like he's projected to win about 600 votes. They say that he should still squeak it out as the winner. Yes, Pennsylvania, the president won by 20 points. This should have been an easy win for a Republican. The Republicans are spinning it that their candidate was awful. He wasn't able to raise money. His mustache was bad. He didn't have a platform. He smelled, I mean, everything and anything. The other thing is, because there was not a primary, the fact that they were able to pick a 33-year-old handsome guy in Lamb, clean-shaven military veteran, who looked like he came from Central Casting, and he was so moderate. Paul Ryan actually said this about him.
What win or lose in Pennsylvania? What was the surprise for you about what happened in that race? The fact that it's so-
I don't know that there's a big surprise. Win or lose, as you say, it's too soon to say what's going to happen. I think the candidate that's going to win this race is the candidate that ran as a pro-life, pro-gun, anti-Nancy Pelosi conservative. That's the candidate that's going to win this race. So this is something that you're not going to see repeated because they didn't have a primary. They were able to pick a candidate who could run as a conservative, who ran against the minority leader, who ran on a conservative agenda. You will have primaries in all these other races, and the primaries bring them to the left. So I just don't think that this is something they're going to be able to see a repeat of.
And he may not be wrong that in these other primaries you're going to have somebody running more to the left. It's not going to look like a Connor Lamb, or maybe it will. Maybe the Democrats will get smart. But it really is interesting that Connor Lamb ran on an anti-Nancy Pelosi platform and managed to squeak this out, which is concerning because the Republicans are trying to figure out how big the wave is going to be, how big the midterm election wave is going to be. And this does not portend well for them. I don't think the wave is going to be gigantic, but this looks like there's going to be turnout, that there was huge, huge motivation on the Democrat side to turn out. And the guy, Connor Lamb, he's, like I said, he's very, very moderate, appears very well, refused to attack the president. He didn't attack the president a lot. And here's what Connor Lamb said about the election and things the president had to say, because the president did come to town and called him this.
I mean, Nancy Pelosi, you can't have that. And Connor Lamb, Lamb the Sham, right? Lamb the Sham. He's trying to act like a Republican, so he won't give me one vote. Look, I don't know him. Looks like a nice guy. I hear he's nice looking. I think I'm better looking than him. I do. And he's slightly younger than me. Slightly.
So joking around about Connor Lamb, Connor Lamb responded. He's very, very careful about how he speaks, and he's very respectful.
There was a lot of foolishness in this election and a lot of really cartoonish campaigning, and I think by the time of the president's visit last weekend, people were kind of tired of that entire approach. I mean, I had people, especially elderly people, coming up to me almost every day and just saying, man, I hate those ads against you. It's not right. It's not worthy of us. And so I think there was just a little bit of burnout on that type of campaigning before the president ever got here.
And do you think the president is better looking than you?
I really have no opinion on that
one. Yeah, he could have taken a shot. The guy didn't take any shots. The very, very interesting thing, the big headline for me out of all of this, is that the Republicans spent a ton of money in this campaign. I think $10-12 million to try and beat Lamb. And what was fascinating is the ad started with a single mother talking about the tax breaks because they thought this is what the polling will show us during the midterms. The tax breaks are what resonates with our constituents, and it's going to get people to turn out because the tax breaks, tax breaks, tax breaks. They found out through polling that they should pull those ads, and they ended up going for sanctuary cities and for this guy's record as a prosecutor, that he put guns out on the street, etc. That didn't work, but it's going to be interesting to see in the midterms what the GOP is going to use for campaigning, because apparently the tax cut thing was not something that tested really well. And also, Nancy Pelosi was going to be the devil. They were going to campaign against Nancy Pelosi. He kind of screwed them up in the sense that he said, I'm not going to endorse Nancy Pelosi. Now, are Democratic candidates in primaries going to be there saying we don't endorse Nancy Pelosi? I don't know, but it wouldn't be a bad thing, wouldn't be a bad tactic. I do know something that they got to do, the Democrats have to do. They have to tell Hillary to shut up, and they're trying. She was out yesterday, where she was overseas, and she was talking about Trump's base again and talking about them being backward, and there's backward parts of the country. And people are responding saying, no, she should shut up and go away, because now they have to answer to her being in Mumbai. In response to a question about how Trump won the 2016 election, she noted the parts of the country she carried produced more economic activity than the middle of the country won by Trump. And she said, I won the places that are optimistic, diverse, dynamic, moving forward. And his whole campaign, Make America Great Again, was looking backward. So now Republicans are motivated and putting out, oh, yeah, the Democrats are calling you backward, and Hillary's taking shots at you again. They would be best served if Hillary, if they would just give her a paid vacation, and she would just go away, because she's not helping anybody by being out there. Her approval rating is lower than the president's right now, and he's at 38%. She's at 36% of Americans viewed her favorably. So I think the Democrats, somebody should tell her, you know what? Here, we're raising money. Here's a Kickstarter. We're going to raise money to send you somewhere where there's no internet service and you can't give an interview. So just go away till after the midterms, actually till after 2020. All right, Talk Radio 790 KABC. Peter Tilden at 10 continues right after that. Talk Radio 790 KABC. Peter Tilden at 10 continues. Hour number two. You know what? Let's do this now. Jackson Brown at the Greek Theater, August the 4th, or Carrot Top at Saban Theater, March the 23rd. Give a call now, 800-222-5222. And if you're the Dino, I'll give you the fourth caller today. All right, fourth caller, 800-222-5222. You can pick either Carrot Top or Jackson Brown. And I got a question for you after we clear the lines from the contest. I'm looking at the fact that hashtag Tillerson has become a viral meme, and people are writing, I got Tillerson my sophomore year of high school. She changed her status to single, but also got into a public relationship with someone else before I even made it back from debate practice. Another one, I've never been Tillerson, but I imagine it's probably even more hurtful when the person is an ocean away on another continent. Is it okay? Has this now opened the floodgates where you can break up via Twitter, where you just announce it? You don't even have to have a conversation with somebody that you're seeing, or you have a relationship with, or somebody who works for you, that you can tweet that they're gone. Remember, with Tillerson, he didn't have a conversation until hours after, and we saw yesterday that Tillerson, when he gave his farewell speech, it looked like he couldn't breathe. It looked like he had just run a marathon. He was out of breath. He looked like he was either going to cry or scream. Because even though I guess he was told last week, or given the sense that he was not going to last, it still comes as a shock to you when you hear it. But by tweet, is it now acceptable to break up by tweet? I used to have to call. You know, in the old days, you just had to call. There wasn't even call waiting. I used to have to call. by the way. Like I'm a big shot, like I ever broke up with anybody. You should have seen what I looked like in high school. But the breakup was always calls or face-to-face at school. You know, somebody would come up to me right before class and go, they'd blurt it out, I can't see you anymore. Well, what is it? I just can't see you anymore. It would go away, and I could see the relief in their face. But I guess if I grew up in the Twitter era, I guess you could get jettisoned on Twitter. Just do it that easily and say, you know, just put it out there. No longer seeing whatever, and change your status on Facebook, and it's over. And you don't have to have that awful, horrible, confrontation of I'm leaving you, and why, and whose fault, and I'll try harder, and it's not you, it's me, and all of that nonsense. This way you can just put it out there in a tweet and get it over with, and I'll see you later. So the Twitter universe has gone nuts with I got Tillerson. So maybe the red flag, maybe it's all okay now. You got the green light, and you can do it. You can Tillerson somebody and say, I don't want to see you anymore. Or just say, moving on, feeling good. And just state what you're doing, and you don't have to take any consideration into them. Good luck. See you later. I'm happy for you. You're a wonderful person. I'm moving on. Peter Tilden, see you later. Boy, that would have made my life a lot easier, although I would have been on the receiving end, because until I got into college, trust me, the only breaking up that happened was not me. All right, 800-222-5222. I'll talk to you. All the lines are lit for the contest. I'll talk to you right after, and right after the news.
KABC News live and local at 1130. I'm John Wolfe. High school walkouts across the country, marking a month since the high school shooting in Parkland, Florida, ranged in size from large turnout to just a handful of students. Correspondent Clayton Neville has been talking to students in the Dallas, Texas area. Says despite schools being out for spring break, students felt it important to have their voices heard.
They're calling them walk-ins and not walk-outs because school isn't in session, but still handfuls of students advocating for change. They say there'll be better turnout at a march on Washington later this month and another walkout scheduled in April.
Locally at Venice High School, hundreds of students walked peacefully onto the front lawn of the campus facing Venice Boulevard. Some students manned tables urging their classmates to write letters to Congress and sign a petition supporting research on gun violence. Students read off the names of the 17 killed during the February 14th shooting in Florida, and a long banner listed the names of all of the victims. And one prominent Republican senator says President Trump's selection to head the CIA, Deputy Director Gina Haspel, does not have his vote. Rand Paul told reporters he's disgusted by her past involvement with torturing detainees.
The quote from one of the interrogators says that Gina Haspel said, "Good job. I like the way you're drooling." This is about Zubaydah, who, as he was being waterboarded. "It adds to the realism. I'm almost buying it. You wouldn't think a grown man would do that." When you read that, sort of the joyful glee at someone who's being tortured, I find it just amazing that anyone would consider having this woman at the head of the CIA.
Talk Radio 790 KABC Sports. Kings lost 4-3 last night in Arizona in a shootout. They next play hosting Detroit tomorrow. UCLA lost to St. Bonaventure, so they next play in a few months. Lakers beat the Nuggets 112-103 last night, and the Clippers beat the Bulls 112-106. That's sports on the home of the LA Kings, 790 KABC. Traffic, a market check, weather, coming up next. KABC News Time, 1131.
Talk Radio 790 KBC, Peter Till in the 10 continues hour number two. The phone number, 800-222-5222. I want to congratulate Janet and Sunland. She's very excited. She's going to go see Jackson Brown. So excited she pulled over at the Greek August the 4th. So congratulations. I still got Carrot Top if you want to go see Carrot Top at the Saban Theater. So, you know, lots of times when people in the news take DNA tests, it doesn't turn out so great. Like the white supremacist who found out that he had black ancestry. Oopsie. Well, Elizabeth Warren, people on the right and left are now saying, you know something, it's enough already with this, with your background. Take a DNA test and shut everybody up, and she won't. She claims she's not running for president in 2020, which means she's probably running for president in 2020. But the more she runs, the more she's out there, the more she's going to be scrutinized. The higher her ambitions, the rougher it's going to be, the treatment from the press. And even liberals are saying to her, why do you keep doubling down on this, you're Native American? Well, bad news for her. After appearing on Fox News on Sunday, where she was grilled about the claim that it's a story that apparently her paternal grandparents, who are somewhat racist, objected to her parents' wedding because of her mother's Cherokee blood. Heartbreaking, right? You bring home this woman, you go, this is the woman, this is who I love. This is who I love. And they say, absolutely not. So they were forced into a Depression-era elopement. Mom and Dad were born and raised out in Oklahoma. My daddy was in his teens when he fell in love with my mother. She was a beautiful girl who played the piano. She was head over heels in love with her and wanted to marry her. And his family was bitterly opposed to that because she was part Native American. So that story has been repeated. However, a Cherokee genealogist named Twyla Barnes wrote a blog on the story that doesn't make sense. She actually reached out and researched Warren's family and found no evidence of Native American ancestry. She then researched the marriage of Pauline Reed and Donald Herring and found it appeared to be an ordinary wedding. She wrote that nothing that's in Warren's story is supported by the evidence she found. She said her genealogy shows no indication of Cherokee ancestry, and her parents' wedding doesn't even resemble an elopement. Uh-oh. An additional evidence doesn't show any indication of the grandparents even being Indian haters because the wedding was performed by a prominent Methodist clergyman, not a justice of the peace. She also noted that a detailed wedding announcement was posted in the local newspaper in Wetumpka, Oklahoma, which would lead you to believe if this was an elopement, they didn't want anybody to know, and everybody's racist. Hey, congratulations to these two kids. I think they're going to make it. If they eloped due to her mother being Cherokee and Delaware, and it was such a disgrace, they also found out they rushed back to Wetumpka the same day they were married and proudly announced it to family and friends. It's not like they left town. She makes it sound like they were on the run and they were, you know, housed by people along like some kind of underground railroad thing. They're hiding them because of the racist grandparents. Mm-mm. They happily announced it to the local paper and then showed up back at home to celebrate. I don't know if there was salami, cheese, and crackers, but they came back home. And, of course, she became a law professor at Harvard, Ms. Warren. And skeptics, she kept bringing up the story. I don't know why she didn't double down. Say it once. It's a story they told me. I'm pretty sure it's true. Maybe it's wrong, but she's going to keep on going. The Berkshire Eagle newspaper, meanwhile, has said she should take a DNA test to dispel or confirm the doubts once and for all. Warren said no, she's not planning to run for president nor to take a DNA test. And her answer is, I know who I am because of what my mother and father told me, what my grandmother and my grandfather told me, what all my aunts and uncles told me, and what my brothers told me. It's part of who I am, and no one's ever going to take that away. But it's looking less and less realistic, the elopement story about the parents and the fact that they were really, really facing all kinds of adversity because they weren't accepted because of the mom's Cherokee past. But I wonder how many more times she's going to come out and keep telling that story, because it just begs for her to take the DNA test and put it to rest at this point. Are those DNA tests, does anybody know, 800-222-5222, are those pretty good, those tests today? Dino says it's 23andMe. And it's not like Ancestry.com, where they found out your uncle was from Poland and that's about it, and you send him whatever money. That this DNA testing by 23andMe is can go pretty far back and is pretty accurate as far as who you are and what your heritage is. I don't know, and I don't know what they cost. I've never done that, and I have no reason to do that because I knew my parents and my grandparents and didn't love them that much. Don't want to find out who their parents were. And I think I know through the stories where I came from, although now I'm starting to question all the stories, because who knows, you know, your family puts together a kind of story about the family, and maybe it's a little more exciting, maybe it's a little more glowing, maybe they overlook some, you know, felonies, and the uncle who had committed a felony or killed somebody. My brother always said some of your best stories never really happened, because they get transferred down, and it's like whisper down the lane, and they grow and grow and grow. So did she really believe that that happened? I guess. But this genealogist looked it up and found out, not hardly, that they were married by clergy, prominent clergy, big wedding announcement, big party, and then a return home to have a wonderful, wonderful reuniting with family and friends who were so happy that they had gotten married. So a little bit of a different story. But if you have done 23andMe, I'd love to know how that works. And if it's, I don't know if you know it's accurate, because I don't know how you would know whatever they report you is something that's accurate or not based on your DNA. I'm waiting for somebody to take a swab, or you know how they do in the spy movies where they're going to take a Q-tip from her ear, or somebody's running around after her now trying to get a cup and a sample. She's probably disposing of everything she uses. Probably carrying like a hazmat bag behind her so she can throw out everything to leave any trace of DNA. Talk Radio 790 KBC. Talk Radio 790 KBC. I guess we didn't pay the music bill again. Peter Tillman 10 continues. Hour number two. You want to whistle something in there? All right. All right, it froze up. It's fine, but pretend there was music there. I was talking about Elizabeth Warren and the fact that she won't take a DNA test. And I was wondering if anybody has taken one of those extensive DNA tests, what they yield. Somebody's going to take, like I said, something from the inside of her mouth or when she goes to the bathroom. I'm sure there are people following her around to try and get a sample to see if she has Native American blood. Diane and Steamy, good morning. You're on Talk Radio 790 KBC. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. Great. Thank you.
So what do you want to say?
Well, I have taken the Ancestry DNA test, and you spit in the tube, and it takes a little bit of time. And I've also taken the raw data from that,
yeah.
And I've uploaded it to something called GED.com, and it does analysis, and it shows you all the way back to wherever you want to look for.
What did you find out?
Well, I found out that our story of the Native American princess is kind of half true. The man had three wives. Wife number three was the Native American princess, but she wasn't my particular family. The other thing is that your DNA isn't necessarily like a straight math problem. You know, you think you get 50-50. Remember back in high school and junior high, you did that four square thing?
Go ahead.
Yeah, and you think you can get 25 here and 25 there? It's not an exact science.
So when they give it, okay, before I let you go, when they give it to you, what's the disclaimer? What's the asterisk underneath the information that they give you?
I think that the asterisk has to go with, like, it may not be, it's not exact. you don't get, you get 50% of your DNA from your father, but it might be connected to another strand of DNA.
So they do put a disclaimer there on how what the percentage of accuracy is, yes?
Yes.
Okay, all right, so they give you that. I want to hear what Jennifer, Jennifer in Huntington Beach, what did you find out?
Hi. So, yeah, we, as far as the accuracy goes, it's accurate. What they don't tell you is that, like, with, you may not have the exact same DNA of your complete sibling. So I got 0% Italian and 12% Native American because my mother's my mother's grandmother was Native American.
Got it.
But my brother got all the Italian DNA.
So wait a minute. Did you see? As soon as you get to 12%, do you drive right to Morongo and you say, "Where's my money?"
Well, they don't tell. They can only tell you that it was Native American, and because my mother knows her grandmother was Peruvian Native American.
Okay.
She knows where it came from, but it doesn't tell you what tribe. So they it's all the same.
I want
DNA
casino money.
Stuff.
I want my. Wouldn't that be funny if they find out that Warren really is Native American? I don't know why she won't take the test. I guess because it's not going to be conclusive, and she won't convince.
Well, it could be like me. I ended up with none of my mom's Italian DNA,
right.
So then her story could be true, and yet her DNA shows nothing.
And before we got about 30 seconds, why did you do it? Out of curiosity.
Because I'm such a mutt. I'm first-generation American. My mom has such mixed DNA. My dad comes from England, although all my British stuff came out exactly like what he said it would be. I just wanted to know.
Got it.
And I'm 3% from Senegal, so I have some slave blood in me as well, which is pretty amazing.
And how much did it cost you for the DNA test?
I believe it was $89.
All right, and it sounds well worth it because it's fascinating. Thank you very much, Jennifer. I just want, boy, would that be cool if I got 25% back and they could identify the tribe, and all of a sudden you just walk in and say, hey, guess what? I'm here. I want my casino money right now. Talk Radio 790 KBC.